We finally made it to the final episode, guys.
Episode 4.
Fuck, dude. How many?
It's been a lot of movies, man.
There's been a lot of movies, a lot of bodies, a lot of hot takes on some of these movies that are not slashers. But we made it to episode 4. And, these actually... Okay, I'm just going to have to straight up say it. These two are slashers. Very differently, but they are slashers.
We waited 4 weeks for it to be two slashers, but yes, we made it. We made have it. Two slashers, yes. Definitively, no arguments, no ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah.
Two slashers.
They actually made them. Yep, they knew what they were making here, strangely enough. And we'll get to reason why, but yeah. And yeah, what's the first one, Joey?
Well, we're going to be doing... Venganza del Silla de Ruedas, a.k.a. La Próxima Víctima.
That's a funny title.
That's a very funny title. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But then we also have quite a rare one, if I understand.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's I call it the 200-plus rarity because I paid too much for it. This one is Orgía Sangrienta from 1991. And yeah, this is one of those that slasher fans surprisingly know exists, but they just never have seen it because it's fucking hard to get for some reason. And somehow I ended up with a copy one day. And yeah, here we are. We're gonna talk about it. And was it worth the $200? We'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out, right?
Yeah. So yeah, a really rarity right here. The other one's pretty readily available. So.
And the other one being. Again, Venganza del Silla de Ruedas, a.k.a. La Próxima Víctima, which I don't know which title I like better, but there's a reason, right? So
yeah.
La Venganza del Silla de Ruedas was kind of like most things in horror history, in foreign history, I guess, too, you could say, is one movie successful, let's kind of ride the coattails of that movie and we'll change our title to kind of mimic that, right? Yeah. That's kind of the story of Venganza del Silla de Ruedas.
Pretty much.
There's an original movie, funny enough, with the brother of the leading star of this movie, Mario Almada, who plays in a wheelchair. And they said, fuck it, man. Let's get his brother, put him in a wheelchair, and we'll make our own little fucking slasher, and we'll fucking retitle it and... You know, like I said, we'll get some viewers off of that movie. But yeah, let's get into it. Directed by Fernando Duran Rojas, who's famous for, you know, he actually was famous for quite a few movies, you know, some pretty major movies. But some movies that I think, you know, fans of the show would know would be Vibora Caliente, Hot Snake, which was released on Blu-ray by Vinegar Syndrome. Mm-hmm. Vagón de la Muerte, which we talked about in a previous episode. And another one that I actually really liked was El Extraño Hijo del Sheriff, a.k.a., you know, The Strange Son of the Sheriff, which is a pretty good one. So and that's pretty available online on YouTube and stuff. So if you want to watch that, you can go out and watch that.
Then he did another one that I like. It's called Ángeles de la Muerte from 1993. It's another horror film with these two psychotic sisters. So, Duran Rojas, yeah, he knew horror. Like, when you watch these genre stuff that he made, like, yeah, he understood the subjects. He did them well. He did his homework. He wasn't just like, I think this is how you make a slasher. He's like, no, this is how you do it.
Yeah, he was pretty accomplished. He even had, he was an assistant director for quite some big movies too. Vampiros de Coyacan, which is a cool cool sci-fi horror movie. And there's kind of like a super art house movie that I've seen and I still don't understand what the movie's about, but Angeles and Querubines, Angels and Cherubs or whatever.
I never seen it, but
that's pretty widely available, but like I said, that's kind of it's a strange one. It's a little bewildering, but maybe there's time for a rewatch for that one. But
it's interesting you bring that up because he actually went to film school in Russia, if I recall. So he was learning the artsy shit, you know.
Oh shit, really?
And then somehow he ended up in these exploitive, you know, genre stuff later in his career.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone's got to make a living into it somehow.
But, yeah.
Pretty prolific writer, actually, on this one, too, Carlos Valdemar, which...
He passed away this year, I learned, too, which I was so bummed, and, yeah, nobody talked about it. I was so, like, upset that nobody talked about it.
That's kind of crazy because yeah. he was. I mean, I should remember the amount of titles, but he had some like over 200.
Everything.
Yeah, I mean
everything that we're probably gonna cover in the podcast, and then everything that I've covered in the site, his name is attached to it.
Yeah, here, some of the movies that you guys may know: Ciclón, you know, Cyclone, which Vinegar released. 357 Magnum, a fucking dope ass action movie. Mm-hmm. Siete en la Mira, another, you know, legendary movie. Vinegar fans would know Cementerio de Terror, Vacaciones de Terror. I mean, the dude fucking wrote everything.
Yeah, he was quick. Like, they gave him the pitch. He was like, okay. Got on his typewriter and right away.
I mean, you know.
He got to work.
That's how it's done, man. You know, that's how you get these. That's how you get actors and directors and people that have like 10 movies in a year. Yeah. It's because of writers like Carlos Valdemar, who was just pumping these fucking. It's crazy. And not just shitty movies. Like, they're actually good fucking scripts.
Yeah, he made shitty stuff, but he made mostly good stuff. And it's a very lengthy filmography. And yeah, it's kind of sad that, you know, he passed away this year. I forgot when exactly. Earlier this year. And yeah, nobody really said anything. Nobody announced it. Nobody made tributes for him. And it's kind of sad because I've heard he was kind of like secluded too for a while. Like, he was just on his own in his final days. So I don't know.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah, it's sad. I was like, what the fuck? You know, he deserves more credit towards due. So, you know, so rest in peace, Valdemar. And, you know, we're going to somehow find a way to pay tribute to him.
Yeah. Well, like you said, like throughout the course of however long this podcast exists, his name is going to pop up.
Yeah.
A bunch. So take notes, everyone. You know, you could start your own little letterbox watch list and wish list about movies that he's done. So you know, tip of the iceberg really here, but some of the main stars, we have Fernando Almada, who of course is the brother of one of the most legendary, and he's legend in his own right. There's nothing wrong with saying that he's Mario Almada's brother, but you know, he is Mario Almada's brother, Fernando Almada, legendary. Claudia Islas, who plays his wife, Sara, in this movie. Another, you know, very prolific actress. Their son in this movie, David, played by Rodrigo Vidal.
If you watch novellas, so if you grew up watching novellas in the 90s, you knew him already.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He always played that twerpy kid getting himself in trouble. He's a goody two-shoes. And in the movie, same thing. Goody two-shoes gets himself into trouble.
This is kind of an interesting role for him. You know, we'll talk about it when we start breaking it down. But, you know, he very, very traumatic and dramatic in this role for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Couple other side players that, you know, I guess, you know, they lend into the story. They're not huge, but we have Isaura Espinosa, who, you know, she's a pretty well-known actress, but she plays Rosa in this movie. Susana Contreras plays another helping hand named Martina. She's one of the victims in this movie. We have Ventura Aguilar, who, you know, plays another victim in this movie, another helping hand later on. And there's a smaller character in this movie. He plays a psychiatrist. His name is Ernesto Moreno. I wrote him down because I would assume he was a relative of the producer, because a lot of the credits in this, like the producer in this was Roberto Moreno Castilleja.
Oh, yeah.
That
name is pretty familiar for that era. The 90s and 80s.
And I would just assume that this was somehow a brother or cousin or relative or something, because he's not really an actor. He only, as far as I could find, he only had two credits. But, you know, sharing the last name of a producer in a Mexican movie pretty much guarantees that you're somehow related to that. But yeah, so like I said, this isn't actually a sequel to Silla de Ruedas, but, you know, it takes its name and kind of
it's so weird,
rides the coattails of that movie.
Yeah, it just rides off the title, and then, like, I mean, we'll get to it later, but Fernando Almada's character resembles Silla de Ruedas, which was played by Juan Garrido.
Yeah.
It was weird. Like, what are they trying to do here?
I don't know. Who knows? Some of like, the horror tropes in this, you know, psychological trauma, you know, that we'll get into. There's a couple isolated homes in this movie, which I think is pretty standard for horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing to me that really stood out was the killer is actually wearing in this movie. Super simple, but fucking effective, man. Mm-hmm. If anyone has seen Alice, Sweet Alice, you know that clear plastic mask that the killer wears in that. I'm not going to spoil that one either, but, you know, by now you should have seen it. If you haven't, you know, the killer wears this plastic mask and has like a raincoat, you know, that they wear, you know, that they cover themselves with. And it's the same as the killer in this movie has that plastic mask, the clear mask with, you know, a couple little paint for like the eyebrows and shit like that, but super creepy mask, super effective, especially in this movie, because it's, you know, it gets dark and they're kind of running around in corners and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty good, at least. A couple other things that they touch on, there's like weird like light pedophilia in this movie. One of the helping hands fucking is helping, because it, you know, based on like the timeline of the movie that we'll get into, the son at the time is 17 when this is happening. So like the one of the helping hands, you know, she's fucking, they end up hooking up and she's she gets all into it. So
yeah, it's so like random.
So yeah, I'll write it down. But then it also deals with like gender identity. The son, David, that kind of goes through these a traumatic upbringing that I'll get into in just a few minutes here. But and the death count in this movie, it's pretty fucking high. Seven kills. Yeah, seven kills. And they're actually pretty fucking gruesome. There's like, you know, hatchet to the face. You know, there's fucking. Yeah, oh, yeah, Armando said it in the episode two, I think. That's his favorite.
Yeah, this one is pretty fucking brutal.
There's like a pitchfork death in this one. Straight up with a ripoff of Friday the 13th. Then, you know, there's a generic just getting hit in the head with like a club. Someone gets stabbed in the chest, like.
And then I think the first kill of when they're at, remember when they move, she just the killer uses a gun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
kills a girl and a guy, randomly.
Exactly, I know. Yeah. So there's there's a lot of kills, a lot of good ones. Some, you know, generic kills, but the ones that stand out is the fucking the hatchet to the face by one of the helping hands. Yeah. But anyways, let's kind of break it down a little bit here. The movie opens up, you know, pretty typical, I guess. You get like these establishing shots of Mexico City with the Fuente de Diana de Cazadoras and the Ángel de la Independencia. And it's all set to like a smooth jazz. Like anyone in LA that remembers the wave 94.7, the wave. Yeah, it's like that, like super smooth, like 90s porno jazz sounding soundtrack. But you know, it obviously starts with Fernando and Sara, who are they're obviously married, but they're also obviously having like marital problems, where, you know, she accuses Fernando of not treating their daughter, which is, it's actually her daughter, it's his, you know, stepdaughter. Not treating her as well, like if it's his own daughter. And you know, he's kind of gaslights her a little bit, because I don't know if he's actually cheating on her or not, but it kind of implies that he is. Like he has like this weird little relationship with another doctor at the hospital that he works with.
Flirtatious. Yeah, they don't really go into it, but yeah, he does seem a little flirtatious.
Yeah, he's like grabbing her by the chin.
Yeah,
like,
it was weird. Yeah.
It's super weird, but you know, he gaslights his wife into, you know, telling her she's fucking crazy for not believing him, that he loves her and stuff.
¿Cómo se siente, mi reina?
Feliz y contenta, mi amor.
¿Y mi príncipe?
Ah, él no. Dice que su padre no me dejó dormir en toda la noche.
Bueno, pues es que me tengo que aprovechar antes de que...
¡Ay, cómo es! ¡Ay, mi reina! Dale un besito, papá, de buenos días.
Se le por la pelota, papá.
Falto yo, a ver, a mí también. Qué lindo. Dame tu pelota para que te sientes a desayunar. ¿Ves? ¿Ves cómo te quiere a pesar de que no eres su padre?
Sara, nunca me he quejado. Y sabes perfectamente bien que siempre la he querido como si fuera mi propia hija.
Pues a veces pienso que no eres muy cariñoso con ella.
Tonterías. Ya me voy. Ya se me hizo tarde. Mi amor, no se te olvide que tenemos cita con el doctor Arana hoy a las 12 del día. Te espero en su consultorio.
But all that leads to is, you know, him going to the psychiatrist and, you know, asking him like, what's wrong with my wife? And of course it's the typical fucking, you know, she's going through her own little mental health problems, you know, he'll figure it out eventually, that type of shit. And it all leads up to the death of the daughter. Fernando runs her over accidentally because he didn't see her while he was backing up in his car. Yeah. And that completely sets off Sara's character in this movie. She just fucking loses it. She can't control herself anymore. Like, she's kind of, you know, she's super distraught, obviously.
And then she's like in denial that her daughter's not really dead.
Yeah, like, she checks out of the relationship. And, you know, I guess this is where it starts, the whole gender identity of this movie, because we flash forward, goddamn, 5 years in the story. Sara was pregnant in the beginning, so they now have a kid. Obviously, it's a boy. His name is David. And she starts dressing him as a little girl and telling him that he is a girl. So she's obviously, you know, still has not gotten over the fact that, yeah, you know, the daughter was killed, basically making her son live as a girl, mm-hmm, without Fernando actually knowing that that's what's happening.
Then when he was born, remember, like, he's like, oh, you had a son. And then she's like, yeah, but she kept saying she had a girl. And we had to keep telling her that she had a boy, but she kept saying she had a girl. So
yep,
even from the beginning, she just did not want to say she had a boy.
Acabas de ser padre. Felicidades.
Gracias, Fanny. ¿Y qué? ¿Fue varón?
Sí, yo misma lo recibí.
¿Y Sara cómo está? Voy a ver.
No, no, ahora no. Ella está delicada. El parto fue difícil. Tiene que descansar.
Eres buena doctora y la dejo en tus manos. ¿Qué te pasa?
No, nada. Nada. Bueno, es que cuando Sara vio al niño, insistió que era mujercita. Pero no me hagas caso. Ven, vamos a que conozcas a tu hijo. Sí.
Yeah, and it fucks up the boy. Like, you know, eventually we flash forward, but before we do, you know, we get the first shot of the killer. And, you know, everyone around Sara is basically, they're not telling her that she's crazy, but they don't treat her as someone who obviously has mental health issues. You know, they keep telling her, like, you don't have a daughter, you have a son. Like, you know, they're basically going against what she believes is, you know, is real, like her reality. So there's a lot of like tension between the characters and the side characters, I should say, like the housemaids and shit, and Sara herself. So
Pedro, tenemos que hablar con don Fernando.
Cálmate, cálmate, ¿qué te pasa?
Se trata del niño David. No soporto que la señora lo esté vistiendo de mujercita.
Martina, no debemos meternos en las cosas de ellos.
Pero pobrecito del niño, no es justo que le haga esto.
Entiende, Martina, que ellos arreglen sus cosas.
Yo no sé tú, pero para mí que don Fernando no sabe nada de todo eso. Esa mujer está loca.
It all kind of sets up with the maid ends up being the first person killed, naturally. You know, the first asshole in the movie is the first one to die.
Of course.
And she dies a pretty gruesome death too. Like, she's just chilling in the house. That's the one thing about this, is like the killer is inside the house at all times. Like, somehow sneaks in to whatever house they're living at, and people start dying. Like, and nobody seems to like care or notice. Like,
yeah, it's
just what, like, happened to this maid? She just disappeared. They fucking,
yeah, she's just gone. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Do we want to spoil this movie?
It's so hard to say.
I don't want to spoil it, but it's hard to talk about this movie without spoiling it.
I mean, we'll just say one thing. The killer is pretty obvious, I think.
Yeah, the killer is exactly who you think it is. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, the first kill happens. Fernando, you know, he's a doctor himself, and he prepares because he has to go to Guadalajara because he gets a call that his mom is, you know, sick and she's on her deathbed. So he decides he wants to go visit his mom. But he has this weird feeling that his car is kind of, you know, something wrong with his car. His brakes aren't working.
Yeah.
And he has his new helping hand. You know, they had to bring in another person because the first maid was killed. So he starts to fix the car. Basically tells, no, you're good. You know, nothing to worry about. But as that is going on, this is when Fernando first, you know, realizes that Sara has been making their son live as a woman. So he completely forgets that his car is faulty. You know, he rushes and starts, you know, yelling at her and like, this is our son. Like, what are you doing? And that's to his own detriment because he decides he's going to drive to Guadalajara and it's his car, his brakes give out and he fucking drives over a ravine. And this is where the Silla de Ruedas comes in because he paralyzes himself. Yeah,
he's wheelchair bound. He's paralyzed.
He can't even talk anymore. Yeah, he loses talk. Off. Yeah. He's basically a vegetable.
Mm-hmm. Like he's still expressive, but just barely though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
¿Qué significa esto?
¿Qué cosa, cariño?
¿Por qué mi hijo está vestido así?
Es tu hijo, es Nancy, mi niña.
Estás loca. Si no fuera porque mi madre está grave, ahorita mismo arreglaríamos esto. Pero ya lo haremos a mi regreso. Tú, vete. Vamos a quitarte esta ridícula ropa. Vete.
And then we flash forward another 12 years. So now the son, David, is 17 years old. The killer is on the loose again, you know, throughout this time. Like, I mean, that's the only issue I have with this movie is that there's like periods that it just nothing. We don't know anything about this story, right? Because what the fuck happened between those 12 years where like there was no killings, I guess, like
just suddenly stopped.
Yeah, I don't know. And so we flash forward. Of course, Fernando's wheelchair bound. But now we get a glimpse into the home life where the son, David, fucking obviously hates his mom. Like, there's obvious tension there.
Oh, yeah.
He comes in wearing, like, these, like, neon green Speedos. Like, super weird. But he starts yelling at his mom, like, how can you treat, you know, your husband like this? This is my dad. And, of course, the mom doesn't want to fucking hear it. But they have two new housemaids. Like, apparently they've moved to a new house that's by the beach.
Yeah.
And this is where we get another the killings start taking place again, right? We get these two like teenagers that are on a fucking moped or something.
Yeah, it's so random.
They get shot.
They just get shot, yeah. Like, killer comes out with their costume and everything, mask, and then pulls out a gun and shoots them. It's like, what?
They have nothing to do with the story at all. Like, we don't know who these people are, but yeah, they get killed. And I get, well, you know what? I guess that's like the starting point of the second wave of killings, I guess. I guess that's why they're in the movie, I guess.
Yeah. But we just don't know who the fuck they are.
No idea who they are.
I'm still trying to figure that out. Who the
fuck were they? And then we're introduced to another character named Jose, who I couldn't figure out, was he related to Fernando or Sara? Do you know off the top of your head?
He was, wait, the young guy, right?
Yeah, like he was the like one, the young blondish fool.
I think he was a relative of one of them. Yeah, I just don't recall.
Yeah, I can't remember. Like, yeah. The story's
kind of vague. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're kind of weird.
But we get introduced to a new character, right? And he takes a liking to David. They go horseback riding. And, you know, Jose's trying to get through to him. Like, you know, what's going on? Like, you're acting kind of strange. And David has his mental breakdown where he's absolutely convinced that he has a sister named Nancy, but that's like his alter ego, I guess. That's who his mom is dressing him up to be.
Yeah.
So he's all types of confused. He doesn't know what the fuck is going on. He doesn't know if he's a girl, if he's a boy, if he even has a sister. Like, his reality is all fucked up.
Yeah.
But then this is when, you know, we cut back to the maids and, you know, same thing. These two new maids, they don't agree with how Sara is living her life and, yeah, and, you know, treating. So you know, naturally they're targets, so they have to die now. And one of them gets like a pitchfork. He's sleeping in his bed, and the killer comes through. There's actually some pretty cool shots, like of the killer walking through the house.
And it's like raining, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's raining at night, and the killer's like kind of like, you know, creeping through the house. No one even knows that person's there. Fucking sneaks into the room and bam, gets a fucking pitchfork straight to through the chest, like, you know, straight up Friday the 13th style. And I don't know, man. It gets
that's where it leads to more kills.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in time, it's just like there's no real, like, we get to see Rosa, who's like the older handmaid. She this is when she starts hooking up with, I guess she has her own little secret fetishes for David, but she ends up taking him to the beach, or following him to the beach, and they hook up.
Okay, but let me just stop you real quick. So remember how, so obviously Isaura Espinosa is much older than Rodrigo Vidal.
Yes.
So if I recall, I mean, I think it was a rumor they dated in real life.
Oh shit.
And then in another movie made like a year before that, she plays his mom.
Damn.
So it was weird seeing that. I was like, first of all, I know she's older, but didn't they play mother and son in another movie before that?
A little May December relationship.
And now it's a maid and young guy. It was just weird. It kind of threw me off there.
Well, she's obviously got to go.
Yeah, so she goes.
She gets it. She gets stabbed in the neck. I think at the beach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she gets fucking stabbed in the neck. She's another victim. The other housemaid,
the one with the hatchet.
Yeah, the one with the hatchet.
She's waiting for the bus.
Yeah, they're like everyone in this, like, no, there's no like cohesion in this story of all these characters, right? They just all exist. For some reason, they all live in this house together, you know, but they all like live separate lives. Like the two housemaids before, I need to backtrack, because before Rosa dies and, you know, she's hooking up with this little boy, she's with the other one who is, I think her name was it Martina or something? I think it's Martina. Yeah. They leave the house and go dancing or some shit. And for some, they're on the side of the road and they got to get back. Rosa decides she's gonna hitchhike. Martina doesn't feel comfortable, so she stays, and blam, she gets a fucking hatchet to the face.
It's like the killer was following him, I guess.
You know, it's like the killer just decides they're gonna dispatch anyone and everyone who lives with this fucking family. And pretty much, I mean, this is the end of the movie. Really, there's like, you know, they get back into the house. Yeah. Jose basically tells David, hey man, like, something strange going on. And I think that's when finally David realizes who the killer is. And I don't want to say, because we don't want to spoil it, but yes,
they reveal themselves.
The killer is exactly who you think it is.
It's a funny revelation too, because it's like, okay, we already knew, but the way they put it out, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, Fernando can fucking move and he can talk now.
Yeah, somehow he manages to start talking again.
I don't even know what to say.
Let's just say he's out of the wheelchair and he gets a gun. Action mode here.
Yeah, he's like talking. I don't want to say it. I don't want to say the name, but he's like, you know, says the name of the person, fucking blast that fool.
I was like, oh, there's the Cia de Rodas connection, kind of.
But the funny thing about this movie is, like, the movie's only about an hour and like 13 minutes
technically,
and then it fucking, after, you know, the climax happens, we learn who the killer is, the killer dies, and then it fucking cuts into like a 15 minute recap of what happened in the movie.
Yeah, it's weird because it's only like that on the VHS, but I have a DVD copy and it's just like, it ends like the after he kills the killer, and then that's it, the credits roll.
I mean, that's how it should be.
Yeah, but the tape, it does have that weird, like, little, like, you know, recap. It's like, what?
I mean, you can literally skip the first hour, 13 minutes, and watch this 15-minute recap, and you'll know exactly everything that happened in this fucking movie.
We should probably just show them that instead of the whole movie.
I mean, maybe, yeah. I mean, it's, then, you know, you'll miss out on little things, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I kid you not, this is like a 15-minute recap of scene by scene, everything that fucking happened. And then the credits roll.
Yeah, that was weird. I was like, wait, what the fuck? why are they doing that? But I don't know. I guess they were like, hey, this movie's too short. We got to fill it.
Yeah, how can we pad this runtime by another 15 minutes? Let's just tell the story again.
Oh my god.
But that's all to say that this movie is a slasher. Like, the kills
100%
are actually pretty fucking good.
Oh yeah. This is a good one. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, I'm not gonna say it's not. It's a good one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it touches, like, for such a short runtime, it actually touches, like I said, on a lot of fucking topics and a lot of issues. Yeah. And, you know, each character, you know, or at least the three main characters, the mom, the dad, and the son.
Yeah. And it's such a cheap movie, but yes, it still tells a good story and has some good kills. Scary looking killer. Yeah. Oh yeah. I fuck with this movie.
Yeah. I think people will like this one a lot.
Oh yeah, for sure. This is one of those where I'm like, you know what? They need to put this one on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I think this one does deserve a Blu-ray.
A DeGauser video. This is like DeGauser video material right here.
Oh, yeah,
VHS.
For sure.
See, I would totally buy the VHS re-release.
The LED. The
LED, fucking, big box. Oh, dude. No. Oh, fuck yeah, dude. You know what? Yeah, we got to let them know.
But does it fit in that criterion, though? Because was this shot on film and then edited on
digital? Oh, yeah, you can tell right away. You can tell right away it was a 16 millimeter and then duped on video and shit like that. 100%.
Oh, so, well, then yeah. I guess the Gauzer is the fucking...
Yeah, we're going to have to hit him up. Hey, we got this movie. We need to put this one out. I don't know who owns the rights, because this movie looks like it's probably in public domain hell or something, because they got so many DVD re-releases after. It'll be on those, you know, 15 packs or 10 pack movies or whatever, 8 pack.
It's got to... Those are got to be bootlegs, though, right?
Something, yeah, because I've seen this movie on DVD, like, several times. I'm like, okay, yeah, I don't know. This is probably one of those movies that got lost over time or something. Who knows? I don't know. But, yeah.
I mean, I guess I would say that this was a fairly successful movie if it's been re-released, whether bootleg or not, like, a couple times. I mean, that's...
And then being sold as, like I said, like, some kind of sequel of sorts to Silla de Ruedas. I don't know, but it's... Yeah, it's a good one.
I mean,
the retitling or whatever the fuck that is. Yeah, that's weird. Like, Venganza del Silla de Ruedas. Like, he got revenge? I mean, he got revenge at the end, but what?
Yeah, that makes me wonder, like, do you think it was retitled after originally being titled Próxima Víctima? And they said, fuck it, like, because he's in a wheelchair, we can kind of...
That's the weird thing, because, like I told you, like, if you watch the Silla de Ruedas movies, you're going to be like, he looks like fucking Juan Garrido's character. He has the gray hair.
Yeah.
He's in the wheelchair. And then you look at Fernando Amado's character, same thing. They grayed his hair out. He's in the wheelchair. And it's like, what the fuck were they going for? It's just so weird. It's like, watch, I'll do a video and you guys are going to see, like, what I'm talking about. It's like, Juan Garrido, Fernando Amado, Juan Garrido. It's like, what, were they really trying to make this like a sequel or something? I don't know. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's one of those I'll probably never find out why, but I really do want to know why, but it is so weird. Yeah.
But it's worth your time. So this gets two thumbs up from both Armando
like
and I.
Like I said, yeah, this is great. And I swear to God, like, I promise you guys are going to really enjoy this one. It's so fun.
I'm sure the clips that they see based on when we do little clip videos of it, people are going to fucking be like, hell yeah.
Yeah, dude. And like I said, this is definitely one of those where I would love to see some kind of re-release. I'm telling you, this is the Gauzer video material.
Maybe in the next couple of years.
We're going to have to, I'm going to have to bug somebody I've been here, one of them. Hey, bro, like, we got this movie.
But then I'm sure they're going to bug you for the next movie that we're going to cover.
Oh, man. Hey, you never know, right? Yeah.
Well, let's get into the second movie, I'll let Armando take over for this one.
All right, guys. So before I go into this one, I paid too much money for this one, okay? I paid like $200 for this tape, and I never do that. But I was like, you know what? I have some money saved up, and I really want to see this movie. Like, I want to see what the hype is all about. Because I've seen it sold before for quite a bit of money, too. So I was like, all right, what is this? Is this really even a fucking slasher? Because even the cover is like, you know, you see the kids right there, the young kids, and then there's the killer with the knife. It's like, all right, this has to be some kind of a slasher film, so let me put it on. They pay this fucking $200+ money on it. And it's Orgía Sangrienta. It's also known as Fiesta de Sorpresa. And I've seen another VHS called Fiesta de Sorpresa.
I don't know if I like that title.
Fiesta de Sorpresa. Yeah, surprise party. Not much of a surprise. Well, I guess there's a surprise at the party. And then, yeah, there's no DVD release. Like, I've looked hard and high and low, and I not find no DVD. So there's no DVD. It doesn't exist. So don't tell me that there is, because there's not. Believe me, I looked everywhere. And, yeah, Orgía Sangrienta from 1991. And it's your basic, you know, slasher trope. Young kids partying in the house. And, you know, killers on the loose. But in this case, it's a little funny, though, because we're introduced to this guy named Alejandro. He's the one that's throwing the party at the house, inviting all his friends, some girls. And then there's this guy named Sulfato. He's played by Armando Araiza. Raul Araiza plays Alejandro, by the way. So the brothers are here playing, you know, each other's counterparts. So Sulfato's a little bit of a weird guy. He's really awkward, and he has like a muscle disorder. I don't know. Do you know what it is? Because I noticed he's like paralyzed maybe on the side. I couldn't really tell, though.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, they didn't really say his backstory or anything, but it looked like he had like muscular dystrophy or something.
Some kind of like that. Yeah, I think they mentioned something like that. He has some kind of muscle disorder or something like that. So he's kind of like, he's kind of awkward looking.
Slurs his speech.
Yeah, he slurs his speech a lot. So he's really awkward. So he's always just following Alejandro around a lot. Like, he's not even like his friend or anything. They're not even friends with him. He's just some guy that's always following him around, trying to, you know, fit in, hang out with them.
Well, they treat him like shit. Like, they leave him like...
Yeah, so whenever they do have him around, they're just, like, picking on him, playing tricks on him.
They, like, got him drunk and, like, threw him in the mud.
Yeah, they threw him in the mud and, like, they threw him back home. Yeah, like, they're just fucking with him. But somehow, Sulfato just thinks they're cool, you know? Like, he wants to be their friend really badly. So he just takes their shit no matter what.
Oye, pero pues ya es bastante tarde para correr.
Uy, es que temprano hay inversión.
Hablando de inversión, ¿por qué no invertimos una lana este fin de semana en mi casa? Se van mis papás a Cuernavaca y la tengo para mí solito.
¿Cómo cuánto nos tocaría?
100,000.
¿100,000? ¿Ya oíste? Te toca poner 200, hijo.
Yo y que 100, ¿no?
¿No quieres a Fabiola para ti solo ese día?
Sí,
ahorita para mí.
Pues ahí está, entonces vas a tu casa y le robas a tu viejo un 200 y yo te la acomodo.
¿Cómo que me la acomoda? ¿Cómo que me la acomoda?
A Fabiola, güey.
No, Fabiola, para mí solito.
Sí, sí. A mi papá 200. Qué pago.
So, yeah, you know, Alejandro's party, you know, it's coming up. They're already getting ready. Sulfato's invited. Alejandro's like, fuck, well, just invite him, whatever. Party's going okay, you know, they're promising Sulfato a girl, you know, they're like, yeah, we're gonna get you with a girl. None of the girls are paying attention to him, of course.
Well, they don't even bring him a girl. He's like the seventh wheel of the
party.
Yeah,
he's just there, you know, nobody's paying attention to him. He feels bad, and then they're all right, they're playing like strip poker, or what was it?
They were playing like their version of spin the bottle, but instead of a bottle, they were spinning a knife.
Well, that was weird. So they're spinning the knife, you know, getting undressed. No boobs shown, unfortunately. Sorry.
Yeah, that's the you know. Yeah, you can't have strip spin the knife and that not actually strip, you know.
Yeah.
Show some titty or show some dick or something.
Yeah. So eventually, you know, Sulfato's feeling bad, and then they're kind of like trying to calm him down. They're like, hey, you know, calm down. You know what? Hey, go get us the pizzas, because they ordered pizzas. Go get the pizzas for us. You know, it'll be fine. So Sulfato, being, you know, the guy that he is, he goes, he disappears.
He's gone for like the whole movie.
Yeah, but then there was something kind of up with him. They show a little scene with him where he's like, you know, he's gonna do something to them, maybe. And then all of a sudden it starts raining hard, and then something goes through the window, and it's a severed dog head. It's Alejandro's dog.
Yeah, that scene is like
that starts off everything.
That's right, that's where the movie changes into the slasher. Everything before that is kind of just story setting shit up.
But, yeah. And you're just like, oh shit, a dog head.
they're all screaming
and then yeah.
Otra de tus bromas, Risitas.
Te juro, Alejandro, que yo no fui.
Risitas.
¡En la torre!
¡Mataron a mi perro!
Mira, ya, mira. Si sube al baño, lávate. Yo voy a ver qué pasó con el perro. Ándale, ve. ¡Ve, ve, ve, ve!
From there, you know, we're led into this, yeah, psycho. This psycho's in the house. We don't really see who the psycho is at first, but then once we do, it's like, it looks like it's supposed to be a woman in a nightgown and a blonde wig. But you can tell it's a man, obviously.
Yeah, very yeah. obvious.
So you're like, could this be Sulfato? Who is it? Somebody. Clearly, they're after these guys, you know, Alejandro and his friends, you know, and of course, they all get killed one by one. The first guy being like, he's trying to turn on the power from the rain, and then they cut his hand off with the hatchet, which I thought was pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny that like chopping off someone's hand is like a thing in Mexican slashers. That's like, I feel like almost every like character, the first death is like, chop their hand off and they'll die. Like,
yeah, immediately. Strange. Yeah. So that was the first one. And yeah, pretty much it. That's how the movie goes. You know, you start seeing this killer just kind of wandering around the house with this big ass hatchet. In the blonde wig and the nightgown, you're like, okay. And then there's like fogs going on, so you're just like, why is there fog going around? Is this like a ghost maybe? I don't know. It was weird. And that's pretty much how the movie plays. You know, you're trying to figure out who this killer is. Or killers are, you know, the kids are trying to get out of the house. So that's pretty much how it goes. It's your basic slasher, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty funny how like they try to escape and the killer's like everywhere they go. Like, oh, let's go to the basement. The
yeah, and there. It's such a like, big fucking house. And then, funny enough, like, I barely found out the other day, and Joey pointed it out. It's like, they filmed it at the Castillo de la Pureza, the real life house. I was like, oh, shit, no wonder it looked kind of weird. Like, even, like, the interior, and the, you know, it was just weird. It's like, what is this? Is this, like, a mansion or something, or a castle? And sure enough, yeah, it's that fucking notorious house.
Yeah.
You want to give him the backstory of that, huh? Really quick.
Well, I mean, it's...
It's known for quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of... A lot of fucked up history with
yeah.
that.
So it's based on the real... Well, so it's known as Castillo del Pureza, Castle of Purity. So a movie was made based on a real-life crime that happened there.
That was a Ripstein movie.
Right? Yeah, Arturo Ripstein movie. And it's about this man who held his family, like, in this house.
Basically held
them
hostage.
Yeah, basically held them hostage from the world, never wanted them to get out. And yeah, it just led to this.
A bunch of abominable crimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Abuse the kids. And
really heinous shit, yeah. And yeah, they filmed this really relatively cheap slasher there.
I mean, what better way to market your slasher than fucking filming say, hey, we filmed it at this notorious house where all these terrible fucking crimes were committed by a father against his own kids.
Exactly. And yeah, so you know, it's one of those movies that does take a while. It's just another hour of nothing, and then it goes from there.
Yeah, there. I mean, like you said, like the tropes in this follow, you know, slashers. You know, you have your horny teens, you have the jokester, the asshole, and there's even a scene where like the jokester hires like an actress to come in and pretend to be like a fucking girlfriend of what's his name, Alejandro, and you know, she pulls out a gun on this fool,
and it's like
a fake fucking
So I think the reason why to this little comedy is because it was directed by this guy named Miguel Angelita Medellito, and he was actually a comedy actor. So weird. Yeah. It's like this comedic actor was directing a slasher movie. But he had a career in directing movies like Video Homes during the 90s. So I thought that was kind of weird, but interesting too. So yeah, that's where those little comedy quirks happen because of him, more than likely. Those are his ideas, probably.
Yeah, it's like they're you know, the kids are like, they're scumbags. You know, they treat, guy, what was his name again? I'm sorry.
Sulfato.
Sulfato. They treat him like fucking shit, man.
Yeah.
They, like I said in the beginning, they get him drunk. They fucking throw him outside of his house. You know, his dad opens the door and he's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I told you not to hang out with those people.
Alejandro. Alejandro. Papá. ¿Dónde estabas, mi muchachito? ¿Dónde estabas? Ya me cansé de decirte que no te juntes con esos pelafustanes que nomás te agarran de risa. Mira, nomás como vienes.
¡Órale! ¡Apúrale! 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 ¡Vas a salir vivo!
Mira, no,
pues cómo vienes, hijo. ¿Dónde fuiste, mijo? ¿Dónde fuiste, mijo?
Fuimos a la disco, papá.
Yo sé, mijo, que no entiendes, que no captas lo que yo te quiero decir. Pero esa gente es mala, es mala. Te va a meter algún problema. Es algo irreparable. Que yo no quisiera que te pasara. ¿Quiénes son esas gentes? ¿Quiénes son?
Papá, ellos me quieren y ellos son mis amigos.
No, hijo, vos, ya es que falta nos hace tu madrecita. Que paz descanse, mijo. Ya es que falta. Déjame preparar tu café, mijo, sí. Déjame preparar tu café.
You don't feel sorry for any of them.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, you want him to die. It's like, all right, I'm rooting for this unusual looking killer.
You know, pretty, again, pretty standard for a slasher, right? You don't, you're supposed to, I mean, I guess you're supposed to like the teens, but when they're all fucking assholes, you want them to die.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it takes its while, but I liked it for what it was.
Yeah, and it's also like, you know, the, It's a low budget slasher, so of course you can't see shit that's happening.
Cause that was the bad part. Inside the for me, that was the bad part. Like, you couldn't see nothing inside. So since they filmed it in that house, yeah, it's so fucking dark.
There's no lighting whatsoever.
There's no lighting. I don't know why.
All you get is like the natural, like not even house lights, because the lights are all, the power's out.
Yeah, the power's out.
You get like light from the moon, you know, like shining through the through the windows. Like, they, like it's hard to see what's actually happening in there, but you can make it out a little
bit. Yeah, you can make it out just enough. But yeah, that was my only, you know, disappointing part of the movie, is it's so fucking dark.
And it's funny too, like the killer, like the killer sneaks into the house, and I guess it's set up by them playing spin the knife, but he goes into the kitchen, steals all the knives, and he starts hiding it around the house. And it's almost like he set it up that way to like, all right, I'm gonna force these kids to run upstairs, and I have a fucking knife hiding behind this painting, and he put one inside of like a fucking like a vase for flowers, and it's everywhere these kids go, there's magically a fucking knife, and they make it a point too, like the kids go into the kitchen, like, what happened to all the knives? I could have swore I had like 10 knives in here. So it's like, I don't know, that little aspect was kind of funny.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting slasher. I mean, I feel like once people do see it, they're gonna be like, oh, that's it. It's going to be one of those things where it's like people are either going to really like it or really hate it. I feel like, yeah, me, I liked it, but I'm not going to say it's the greatest thing ever.
I think, again, you know, we can't talk about this and not compare it to like another American slasher. I mean, slashers are all pretty much the same, right? They start off super slow.
Mm-hmm.
You get introduced to these teens. The killer is either fairly obvious or not.
Here it was, it's a little dark hard to tell. Shit.
It's a little hard to tell, but
once you get going, you're like, okay.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to spoil it, and I'm not going to spoil it. But you know, at the end, it's just funny how like all these fools die, and Sulfato comes back. You know, like Armando said, they send him out to go get these pizzas. Right?
It took forever.
He took fucking forever. He was gone for like 40 minutes of the movie,
and he's all white. Remember?
Yeah, and he comes back into the house. He's like, "Hey guys, I got these pizzas," and he just sees all these dead fucking bodies. He's like, "What the fuck?" Like,
yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. Those fucking pizzas, man. That must have been cold.
The Domino's pizza, man. You know. So.
Oh man. All right, but I'm gonna be honest though. I'm not really a fan of Mexican made pizza. It has a different texture and different flavor, and I don't know, I just never been a fan. So when I saw that they were going for pizza, I'm like, mm-mm.
You know, funny enough, Mexican pizzas, and I'm not talking Taco Bell, Mexican pizzas are different, you know. Toppings,
they have a very different taste. It's weird.
And I'm sure it's because they don't use all kinds of artificial ingredients like we use here in the U.S.
That's true.
But I will say, I remember, god damn, I must have been 11, maybe 12. I was living in Guadalajara for a little bit, and, you know, I was going to school there. And my uncle picked me up, and we're like, "Oh, what are we going to eat?" And he's like, "Oh, they got this new pizzeria. Let's go get some pizza." I was like, "Fuck yeah."
It was Little Caesars. And it was like a fucking thing. Like, they love, like, you know, it's in Mexico in general, like, you get these, you know, like, Little Caesars here is like a piece of shit, like, oh, fast food chain. It. Over there, it's like you can go sit down and have little, you like, know. Little, like, how Pizza Hut was in the 80s for us here. It's like, that's what Little Caesars is like over there. That's
true. And Domino's.
Domino's is the same. I will say, though, that I had Domino's in Zacatecas one time. Fucking bomb.
Yeah, I don't know. I tried Mexican pizza. I made pizza, and I'm like, I don't know. Just not a fan. So when I saw Sulfato with those boxes, I'm like, oh, that doesn't look very appetizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, so like I said, I mean, you're either going to love this movie or you're not, or you will like it, but it's not the best out of the two. The bad of the two for me would be Silla de Ruedas. That's the best one.
I think Silla de Ruedas was dope. I think they're both dope, actually.
Yeah, they're both good in their own ways.
I think because Orgia is a little bit more low budget, and
I think Venganza was more low budget.
You think so?
Oh, 100%.
I mean, maybe, but
I mean, they're both cheap, but this Venganza was even more cheap. You could just tell.
Yeah, maybe.
It probably took him like a week to make it. Or he was probably like 2 weeks.
I think for what audiences, like American audiences are used to in terms of a slasher, I think they would like Orgia more, actually. Although I do think that the payoff and the kills and the story in general is a lot better in Venganza de Silla de Ruedas.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, that has a more.
But again, I think because people are used to low budget slashers, they'd be more familiar with how Orgia is you know, shown to them, how the story unfolds, how the kills are, like,
yeah.
But yeah, because the Venganza de Silla de Ruedas, like, there's a shitload of kills, and it's I will say yes, it's a slasher, but it doesn't play like a slasher, even though it is a slasher, you know.
Yeah,
if that makes
true.
Any sense.
No, I know,
like,
what you're saying. Yeah, I get
you know
it.
You get the killer, of course, but it's just,
it plays off so unusual, and like,
it doesn't feel like a slasher, even though it is a slasher. Exactly. If that makes sense. Yeah. I know we're fucking contradicting ourselves at this point. But
like any good podcast,
yeah, you know, you talk long enough and you start rambling and talking in circles, and you know, start talking about pizzas in Mexico and how they how different they are. But
other than that, yeah, I mean, like I said, both are enjoyable in their own ways, and yeah, it's up to you guys if you guys want to, you know, we'll see. If you can find Orgia Sangrienta, watch it. Silla de Ruedas, same thing. If you see it somewhere, buy it. Don't just skip it, you know. You're going to enjoy these either way.
Well, that's the reason we started this podcast anyways, is to kind of expose people to these. And you can see the cover for Venganza de Silla de Ruedas and look at it and be like, I don't need to watch that. But you kind of do need to watch it because it's fucking sick. And then you see the cover of Orgia Sangrientas, and you're like, yeah, fuck, oh, yeah, yeah, I want to watch this shit.
Yeah, it has good pictures for sure. Yeah.
But, you know, like Armando said, good luck finding it. It's a pretty
fucking rare.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, do I regret paying? Not really, but it was also kind of like, maybe I didn't have to.
Listen, I've paid way more for shit that I should not have been paying for. But... Yeah. You know, whatever. If you guys find your way into watching these movies, you know, you could, again, join the discourse. You know, tell us, are these slashers or not? Do you think these are slasher movies? Do you think they deserve to get restored and put out on a Blu-ray? I think yes. You may think differently. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, just let us know what you think. And especially with the other episodes, you know, let us know. I want to hear your thoughts on all these fucking movies that we talked about.
Yeah, and if you've only listened to this episode, go back and listen to the other three you know, go to the back catalog. And I'm sure, you know, we took a while to get into, like, the Mexican horror shit like this. But, you know, we'll continue it. And, you know, we want to expose more movies that, you know, get less love, you know. Yeah, so hopefully you guys are into it. Again, like we say every time, tell your tia, tell your tios, tell everybody. Write a review, give us 5 stars or 1 star if you hate us.
We're available to listen to on every podcast platform.
You don't have
to pay anything.
Nope. Always free.
No commercials on estrogen medicine or whatever. I was listening to a horror podcast. I'm not gonna say which one. Medicine for like Viagra and like old people stuff, shingle shots. I'm like, what the fuck? And then they're talking about like Freddy Krueger or some shit.
Yeah, no.
Nah, I was like, no, dude.
No ads here, guys.
No advertisements and no bullshit here. Like, we're, you know, we actually watch these movies. We understand them. We love the, you know, the culture. We love the actors. You know, we take your time, you know, learning about these people.
Yeah, it's one thing, you know, to talk about shit just for the sake of talking about it, but you know, we really want you guys to watch these movies as well. You know, we want you guys to you know, engage in it, and we know that not everyone listening is Mexican, and you may not understand certain aspects of the culture, or you know, you may not understand the language, but you know,
give it a chance.
Yeah, these movies are fucking good.
I always tell people, trash mix is for everybody. Trash mix is for lovers. Trash mix is for everybody.
Trash mix is especially for haters too, though.
Oh yeah. Haters, copycats. But anyways, well, we're gonna have to send the Venganza de Silla de Ruedas after them.
That's right. Go get your fucking revenge for all the net bangers.
Send the fucking killer from Panico en el Bosque out to their $1 million apartments in Silver Lake.
Or maybe we'll get Hogwad to fend off the haters. So.
Yeah, we're gonna have to send all these killers. But yeah, I'll make sure that one of them gets a hatchet to the fire. No, I'm just joking, guys. Don't report me.
Damn. Here comes ICE time.
ICE, FBI. I did get an FBI visit once. No, I'm just joking. Damn. No, I didn't. I'm just joking.
Now we'll keep those off the air.
But anyways. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. I'm very happy we got to talk about these movies, especially like just these really, really obscure films. You know, these were really obscure.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds cliche, and I hate saying it, but I have to say it. Like, if we're not talking about these movies, nobody else is going to talk about them, unfortunately.
And I'm glad I'm seeing people adding them to their watch list. It's like, all right.
That's the best part.
We got you guys.
As usual, you know, follow us everywhere. Trash Mix Podcast on Instagram. Trash Mix is Armando. I'm Cheddar Brown on Instagram. We do have a special guest for this episode as well. You know, he gave us a chance to be on his podcast earlier in the year. It's an all Spanish podcast, so unfortunately, if you don't listen.
Cinefilos en Apuros with Elias. Shout out to him.
Super cool guy.
Yeah, nuestro compañero de México, Elias. Gracias por su apoyo con todo esto y por su podcast donde habla muchas películas mexicanas y pues cine de todo. Él habla todo de cine, pero también es alguien que sí le gusta cine mexicano y cosas así del cine popular. Y sí, aquí está su grabación y él habla de Orgía Sangrienta y Venganza de Silla de Ruedas.
¿Qué hubo, Elias? Ahí nos hablamos.
Ahí nos hablamos.
A ver, antes que nada, amigos de Trash Mix, para mí es un placer, es un gusto estar con ustedes. Es un gustazo que me hayan considerado y que me hayan invitado para esta serie de episodios acerca del slasher mexicano. Y más aún, porque me lanzaron al ruedo con... ¡Ay Dios! A ver, pues con un auténtico reto. Porque por un lado me hicieron sufrir viendo un título que yo no tenía en el radar, y creo que ahí está lo exquisito, que me acercaron a una película que yo no había visto, que incluso desconocía de su existencia, y como ustedes saben, miren que me gusta y disfruto bastante ver cine mexicano de todo tipo, incluido el cine basura, como ustedes mismos denominaron a Orgía Sangrienta, y lo voy a citar tal cual, así como ustedes lo escribieron en su blog. Y pusieron ustedes palabras más, palabras menos, lo exacto, que es, acá hay otra obscuridad de la basura mexicana desenterrada. Y sí, me pusieron a ver un cascajo por ahí sepultado en el olvido, que es Orgía Sangrienta, una película de 1991 dirigida por Miguel Ángel Lira. Y ya para entrar en materia, como digo yo, para leer por partes esta película, pues nada más, darle una breve sinopsis a su audiencia, a su público, de que vamos a ver un grupo de jóvenes liderados por un muy chaval, Raúl Araiza, que dice, oigan, pues ¿por qué no nos vamos a pasar el fin de semana todos juntos y hacer una fiestecilla y algo cotorrón? No, es un grupo petit comité de pocos chavos, cuatro y cuatro chavas, ¿no? Entonces dice, pues si hacemos esta fiesta en una de esas, ¿por qué no? Nos desfogamos y sacamos a relucir los deseos carnales. Y en este grupito de amigos también está Sulfato, protagonizado por Armando Araiza, también muy chavito. No más que él es discapacitado, ¿no? Él presenta una discapacidad por lo cual no es bien recibido y es maltratado incluso por los integrantes de este núcleo, salvo por Raúl Araiza, que él sí le tiene estima, él le da un poco del beneficio de la duda para que se incluya en este grupito. Sin embargo, las cosas no van a salir del todo bien en la reunión y un asesino misterioso va a aparecer en la casona para comenzar a matar a algunos de los muchachos y ya sabrán ustedes o ya verán ustedes por qué. Tampoco quiero spoilear tanta cosa para que se inquieten de verdad a revisar esta basura enterrada que solamente arqueólogos, cinéfilos o cinéfagos como ustedes, mis amigos de Trashmex, se lanzan a la búsqueda de ese material y lo hallan. Y no solamente lo encuentran, ¿no? Sino que también tienen el tino de compartirlo con gente como su servidor. Ahora sí, vamos entrándole y comencemos por precisar que es una historia en sí muy, muy básica, muy sencilla y que no es nada nuevo, pues, ¿no? Hay varias películas de terror, de horror, de slashers que tienen historias muy básicas, muy sencillas, pero lo importante está en ver cómo nos cuentan esas historias y qué pasa aquí que vemos una ejecución demasiado torpe que lleva la historia a un plano de la infamia, ¿no? De la absoluta ridiculez, pues errores muy claros y muy palpables de la dirección, que lo podemos encontrar, por ejemplo, con dos secuencias que son demasiado largas, pero que no sirven de nada y no cuentan absolutamente nada, ¿no? Una de ellas tiene lugar en una cafetería donde se reúnen para planear precisamente esta juerga que no llega para nada a orgía, dista mucho de ser orgía y también dista mucho de ser sangrienta, ahorita voy a tocar ese punto, y se pierde demasiado tiempo ahí, en algo que no está aportando pero absolutamente nada a lo que estamos viendo. Y después vamos a ver una secuencia muy larga donde este grupo de chicos se ponen a jugar a la botella con la idea de que se empiecen a quitar las prendas. Pero su juego de botella es más ingenuo que lo de que podíamos jugar nosotros en la secundaria, la verdad. Y es aquí donde también entra un conflicto de mi parte con el director, que de por sí ya es demasiado limitado. Peor aún, es muy moralista. Es muy moralista con un slasher, ¿no? Es muy moralista con una película independiente. ¿Qué quiero decir con esto? Que si ya estás jugando a la botella, vamos a quitarnos la blusa, vamos a quitarnos el pantalón, bueno, pues apuéstale y arriésgate al desnudo. No vemos absolutamente nada de eso. Pensaríamos que estamos viendo una película de 2025 hecha en Hollywood, donde los ejecutivos determinan o deciden que no hay que mostrar ni siquiera besos, ¿no? Porque ahora hasta es exagerado que se bese en la pantalla. Bueno, esta película de 1991 se anticipa desafortunadamente a estos tiempos que vivimos y se atañe a esa moralidad donde no hay que mostrar absolutamente nada. Nada de cuerpo, nada de besos y casi nada de sangre. Y ahí viene mi otro conflicto con el director y con la película en sí, porque si me estás planteando el escenario de que hay un asesino que comete crímenes en contra de los chicos al interior de esta casa, pues no te guardes nada, absolutamente nada, ¿no? O por lo menos juégale un poquito a plantear en el montaje el tema de los asesinatos, si es que no quieres mostrar absolutamente nada, pero aquí no se apuesta por la una ni por la otra. Evita a toda costa la sangre, la vamos a ver casi nada por ahí con una mano cercenada, vamos a verlo con una cabeza de perro que aparece ahí aventada por la ventana, no vamos a ver cómo se ejecuta el perro, ustedes tranquilos, y ya. Y en todo caso, si se nos presenta cómo es el asesinato, no lo estamos viendo porque ahí viene otra falla de la película, no hay iluminación, y no hay iluminación sí, por falta de presupuesto, pero también por falta de creatividad de parte del realizador. Pues oye, váyanse por unos focos o ocupemos otro tipo de lámparas porque no se ve absolutamente nada. Pero miren lo que son las cosas, de cómo de lo malo, lo bueno, y de cómo un accidente puede propiciar algo muy atípico, muy raro y muy sui generis. Porque el hecho de que no se vea nada, de que no estemos viendo nada por una falla técnica y creativa al no revisar la iluminación, juega con nuestra sugestión. ¿Qué quiero decir? Que nosotros nos estamos imaginando cómo es que el asesino está matando a tal persona o qué está agarrando, qué está haciendo para matar a esta persona. Entonces ya nosotros nos involucramos en lo mental en aras de tratar de descifrar qué está sucediendo. Así que por error, de manera accidental, le juega un poco a su favor pues esa deficiencia. Algo que también me llama la atención es 1991, habíamos visto ya en la década de los 80 varios slashers, sobre todo gringos de corte B, muy propositivos en varios sentidos, ¿no? Desde el mover la cámara, de cómo resolver algunas cuestiones y de cómo proponer los encuentros entre los jóvenes que se traen ganas, ¿no? Y aquí, pues el director tan moralista dijo, pues vamos a hacerlo como con cacahuates y papitas. Y le dedica también una secuencia larguísima a cómo planean servir los cacahuates y las papitas para que todos coman en la reunión. Una cosa no solamente absurda, sino inverosímil. Pero lo peor o lo mejor de todo es que existe aquí, en esta visión mexicana del terror de 1991 de Miguel Ángel Lira y Orgía Sangrienta, que es: los jóvenes se divierten con cacahuates y papitas, así es como también van alimentando su deseo. Incluso hay un plano cenital sobre cómo se habla acerca de los cacahuates y las papitas, ¿no? Una cosa ridícula. Pero para cerrar, voy a rescatar algunos aportes de la película. El primero de ellos tiene que ver con el personaje de Armando Araiza, ¿no? Porque estamos viendo a un chico discapacitado que no es recibido por el núcleo en el cual se quiere integrar. Él quiere tener amiguitos, ser uno más. Sin embargo, se topa con la indiferencia y la crueldad de estos otros chicos que lo ven como si fuera una especie de monstruo. Entonces aquí podríamos hablar de la monstrificación de la discapacidad desde el género del horror. O sea, ahí hay una lectura que nos remonta a 1991 para comprender cómo se veía y cómo se trataba precisamente a las personas con discapacidad. Eso es un punto atendible. El segundo punto atendible sería que nos perdimos a lo mejor de un actor protagónico de filmes de terror, de películas de terror, y me refiero a Raúl Araiza, porque para ese entonces él también ya había hecho la legendaria película Perdida y Extraviada de Carlos Enrique Taboada, la última película que fue Jirón de Niebla, que protagonizó precisamente Raúl Araiza. Era la película con la que se despedía Taboada, era una película de terror, y si empezábamos a sumar títulos como este de Orgía Sangrienta, hubiéramos visto un despunte de un actor que hubiera encabezado el cine de género en México durante los fines de los 80, principios de los 90, y otro sería el cantar tanto para el género como para la producción y la proyección de algunos talentos en esos tiempos. Y sin embargo no sucedió, ¿no? Entonces también tocar ese tema como contexto. Y para responder a la pregunta de si estamos viendo un slasher mexicano en lo que es el concepto del subgénero, sí, sí lo estamos viendo, porque cumple con los requerimientos de los lugares comunes y de los clichés establecidos para una producción de esta índole, ¿no? Grupo de chavos que se van a un lugar olvidado, apartado, algo sucede, algo pasa, algo hacen, puede ser ocasionado desde el interior de su núcleo o alguna fuerza extraña desde el exterior que los va a poner en peligro y que además los quiere asesinar. Vamos a ver la figura del asesino misterioso, de un ente que no sabemos si pertenece a este mundo o sí, eso ya lo determinarán ustedes. Entonces, ¿cómo juegan? Les digo, de manera muy moralina, con el tema de los deseos carnales, los placeres. Vamos a escuchar chicas gritando, también unos gritos terribles y espantosos, mal dirigidos, pero en términos concretos cumple con los parámetros y lo que establece el slasher. Así que estamos viendo un slasher mexicano que, les voy a reiterar, se agradece que me lo pusieran al alcance para descubrirlo y para encontrarle los puntos flacos, los puntos muy criticables que tiene, pero ¿por qué no? También atender esos otros detalles contextualizados en la época en la que la película salió a la luz, y trasladarlos a la actualidad para ver qué ha cambiado, ¿no? Cómo hemos evolucionado o involucionado en el trato hacia las personas con discapacidad. Y la otra es, ¿qué talentos pudimos tener y no tuvimos dentro del género de terror o del cine de género? ¿Y cuáles podríamos tener hoy día para que proliferen precisamente en un género que poco a poco empieza otra vez a ser de la confianza de algunos productores?
Próximamente estrenaremos